Woohoo, people! Woohoo! Best holiday! Merry Christmas, everybody! I love Christmas time! Man, I picked the wrong message if that's what I did. All right. Hey, it is great. So here, let's see how well you do. I try this every year to make sure, but we're going to find out if you still got it in your bones, in the sense of your soul. He is risen. Oh, so sweet. All right. So like the first time I ever did that in church, I didn't know that was the answer. So people were like, he is risen. I'm like, yeah, you know, but indeed is good too. So listen, this is the day. This is the big day for us as Christians. Now, if you're not a Christian, you're here in the room. I am so glad that you've taken this day to come and hang out with us, because this is the big day. This is like the Super Bowl for Christians. In fact, right now, just look at the person next to you. Give them a little knuckle bump, maybe a little high five. We're packed in this morning, so the knuckle bump is that far away, right? But man, it is that way, because when we think about this particular holiday, it is really the premier thing. Like, Christmas is cool, but the whole thing about Christmas is to get to this particular holiday. And so I know a lot of kids are like, well, I like Christmas more because I get presents and stuff, and hard-boiled eggs, not so fun. But for all of that, this is the one that matters to us as Christians. And this is the one, again, if you're visiting with us today and maybe don't understand our faith as much, this is the one that we honestly look at and say, this is what sets us apart. Grace sets us apart, and this idea that our God came to the world to dispense that grace, was killed by us and our hate and our sin and our rebellion, and nonetheless, he says, but I'm still going to dispense love, and even though you're going to be hostile to me and you're going to deal with me in a negative way, I'm still going to rise 3 days later and dispense this gospel to the world in the most beautiful and possible way that can be done. That's why for us, this day is a big deal. In fact, so much so that Paul, who was one of the followers of Jesus after Jesus rose, in fact, Paul hated Jesus until down the road some years, and then he came to know Jesus in a powerful way. He writes this letter called 1 Corinthians. And in this, he says, here's how important the resurrection is. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then we are the most pitiable of all people. It's like Paul just doubles down and says, no matter what else he did, if he didn't rise from the dead, everything else doesn't matter. You're just playing patty cake with a make-believe God if Jesus didn't rise from the dead. If Jesus didn't rise from the dead, he says, you know what? Pick your own path, go your own way, do your own thing, make up your own system and values, because honestly, this book should go the way of the dodo bird and Zeus and Odin if Jesus didn't rise. Like, that's how much Paul doubles down on this concept. He's like, it is the most critical, the most central, and the most important truth of the Christian faith, that Jesus is not dead, he is surely alive. That's his heart, that's his passion. But here's the question I have for us today. Is that truth, that Jesus rose, is that truth a truth in you? In other words, not just an historical truth, a Christian creed, a code of belief, but is this idea that there was this event that happened somewhere in the 30-something ADs that has some impact right now in 2024 in your world, in your life, in your heart? Because that is the fundamental question. Because when I look at this whole story and this whole reality, this event that happened 2,000 years ago, it's meant to have an impact in our lives today. It's meant to have a transforming impact in our world, in our thinking, in the way we do things. Because the resurrection is not simply a part of our creed, our code, our doctrine, our doxology, or our historicity. It's meant to be understood and experienced as a living reality, an empowered reality for the people of God. Something in which we lean into and we gather strength from and courage from and determination for life. It has so many of these elements to it. So it's not just, again, a chunk of our past, but it's a living reality of our present. In fact, there's this little letter that Paul wrote called Philippians. So he writes it to this church in the community of Philippi. And at the core of Philippians, you could say its theme is joy. Joy and a joy-sucking world, because we all know the world loves to suck joy out of our lives. Circumstance, health, emotion, whatever it is, there's always something trying to pry joy from us. And so he writes this letter, and he's like, I have found the secret of joy. I understand the definition of joy. I know the real source of joy. So that's the heart of his whole little four-chapter kind of letter there. What's interesting is you kind of plot out the letter, as in the first two chapters, he won't shut up about joy. It's like, dude, for us pessimists, just slow your roll a little. But he's like, no, joy, 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 joy. And then he gets to chapter 3, and the word joy just sort of evaporates. And you're like, this is weird, man, because you were like cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs when it came to joy in the first two chapters. And now we get into this one, and it just goes away. Like, did you stop focusing on joy? Well, if you really pay attention, you will see the subtle shift as he moves from talking about joy to talking about Jesus. Or maybe another way to say it is that he replaces the word joy with the word Jesus. Because what Paul knows is that the real source of joy is not just, hey, I have a new set of circumstances, I have a new set of conditions. No, he's like, man, I've had joy in the worst stuff of life. And he's like, the secret then to having true joy when things are awful is the presence of Jesus. It's the stuff of Jesus. And inside his argument, he brings up something that I think is really interesting, confusing, mysterious, a little mystical, not rooted in the normal stuff that we consider about faith, but it's 16 words that really give us kind of the sense of the secret that he's tapping into. And it's not about, hey, I want all the success and all this popularity, religion, fame, whatever. No, he's like, man, I found out what really counts. In fact, if anything, he even goes into this whole idea of saying, you know what, I used to be religious. I used to be successful. I used to have everything I wanted. And he goes, it doesn't work. It doesn't play. That's not what I hunger for anymore. I've come to understand what really matters, what really changes the trajectory of life. He says in verse 10, I want to know Christ and experience the mighty power that raised him from the dead. He says two things, right? It's like, I've tried everything else, it doesn't work. I just want to know Christ. And I don't think what he means by that is just in a theological, doctrinal way, a dogma way. I think he's like, no, I want something deep. Like, I want this real, authentic relationship. But then he also says, and I want to experience the mighty power that raised him from the dead. Now, when we read this, we have a tendency to think, well, he wants to understand what happened at the first resurrection. Or he is looking forward to the final resurrection. But see, those are past tense and future tense. And Paul doesn't speak in past and future tense here. He actually speaks in the present tense. What he's saying is, I want to know in my life today the very power that rose Christ from the dead on his day. I want that mysterious, tough to define, very experiential thing to be true in my life in the here and in the now. See, for him, he knows that's where joy comes from. This ever-present power offered into the soul, the same power that rose him, is the same power that can sustain you and I on this day. See, I believe it comes down to when we are seeking, when we are striving, when we are yearning and longing, not for more religion, right? But for the ever-present presence of Jesus to be sensed and felt in our lives in a very real interpersonal soul-mixed way. See, that's why I say today is more than just celebrating a code or an account or a creed. No, it's celebrating this thing that is given to you and to me. This thing that we can still experience on this day. See, that's why I look at Paul and I'm so inspired by what he says here, because he's not focusing on the resurrection bookends of past and future, but what is daily present to everybody. See, that's the thing I know in my own life I want to experience, and then from that I want to export it. Because I think the resurrection power of Jesus is that undeniable essence of his life in his people that comes out in the daily stuff of life, where life is messy and hard and painful and discouraging and disappointing for people. And then we step in with this effervescence of the sense of Jesus in difficult things, and it brings calm and stability and hope and joy and a sense of peace in the world. Like, that's the stuff of the resurrection. And so to grasp this just a little bit more, I want to actually go back into the story of that first resurrection, because there's some cool stuff in there. I just love it. Now, the resurrection is recorded in all four of the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But it all kind of has different flavor depending on kind of each author's focus and intention. But I'm looking at the Gospel of Matthew. It starts in chapter 28. It says, early on Sunday morning, as the new day was dawning, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to visit the tomb. So you probably know the storyline a little bit, right? So Jesus comes into town on that first day of the week. Everybody's thrilled. He's weeping because their version of peace and his version of peace are opposites. They're different. They're radically diversified. And then from that, he has confrontations with the religion, and he's preaching different messages, and he's doing different things. But then finally, Thursday night comes, and he washes feet, he breaks bread, he is betrayed, he prays. It's awful. It goes into this thing called Good Friday, which is honestly not good at all. It's terrible. It's hard. It's painful. It's hateful Friday. It's there on that Friday that he is executed on a cross. He takes upon himself the hatred of humanity. He there in that moment experiences the full brunt of our wrath against God, our hate against God's sent one. And in exchange for that, he shows what? Love, grace, forgiveness. And there he dies. And he's laid into a tomb. That was on Friday. On Saturday, the Gospels don't really speak of much that happened on that day. There's a little weird snippet in 1 Peter that talks about it. All we know for sure on Saturday is the disciples are all just hiding in fear. You might call it shell shock Saturday. That's where they're at. But then rolls in Sunday. And as Sunday is erupting into the world, we see two women approach the tomb. And just as a quick sidebar, since, you know, I have the freedom to do that, the women of the final week are amazing, right? They're amazing. Think about it. It's a woman that anoints Jesus' body for burial early in the week. His disciples don't do that. The dudes, the bros aren't rolling in to do any of that. It's this woman that does it. And then when everything goes down in a negative way, it's the guys that take off and ditch Jesus. It's the women who are there at the cross. It is the women who are there when they pull him off the cross. It is the women who go to where the tomb is. And now it is women who are going early in the morning to anoint his body for its final burial. The women are like the human heroes in the story, right? Kind of the overlooked overlooked heroes that are doing this beautiful thing. So the men haven't stuck around, they haven't had the courage, they haven't remained loyal, but the women are here on the scene. And so early in the twilight, it is the morning of mourning, right? They're just grief-stricken, and now they're approaching the tomb. And I don't know if you've ever lost somebody dear to you, maybe a spouse or a child or a grandparent or dear friend or whatever else. When you're in that state, you're just kind of shell-shocked. Right? You're just kind of moving from thing to thing, and you're like, you haven't really slept much, you haven't ate much, whatever else. And so again, you got a picture for these women. Like early in the week, everything was epic. Their king rode into town. They thought this was going to be the thing that changed everything. And then it all goes south on Friday. And their king is now a corpse. And so now I'm sure there's all sorts of different emotions, and they know that once they go to this tomb and once they anoint this body, it is the conclusion of the story. Their hope is going to be lost and vanquished, and everything they thought was going to be is not going to be. They thought that this week was the capstone of everything Jesus had been doing for 3 years, and instead it's ending now with a headstone. But just as the morning is cracking the darkness, the earth is split and the heavens open up. So suddenly, there was a great earthquake, for the angel of the Lord came down from heaven and rolled aside the stone, and he sat on it. His face shone like lightning, and his clothing was as white as snow. The guards shook with fear as they saw him, and they fell to they were dead. Like they just fainted, almost to the point of feeling like they were dead. And then the angel spoke to the woman. "Do not be afraid," he said, "for I know you are looking for Jesus who was crucified. He isn't here. He is risen from the dead, just as he said would happen. Come and see where his body had been laying." So here's what's super cool about this, right? First of all, the angel invites the women to come and see something that was. Some proof that they know. He's like, you were there. You were there when they pulled him off. You were there when they brought him in. You were there when they laid him down. Like, this is undeniable. You are eyewitnesses to that account. And what is true about all of that is that he was dead. He was crucified. He was buried. But then the angel does this thing, and it's designed to blow their minds, and he changes the tense from was to is. He was dead, but now he is risen. right? That erases that grief-stricken past in just a single word, was to is. And what's cool about this is that it was according to the plan. It was the way it was meant to go down. I think it's important to realize that the cross and resurrection isn't like a plan B. It's not, right? It's real easy to say like, all right, it's supposed to go a certain way, but then the Romans got crazy and the Jews got crazy and everybody was a little nutty and they thought it was gonna be rebellion and revolution, so Jesus is crucified and now God's like, oh man, that wasn't the plan. I gotta figure out something. Give me a couple of days, give me 3 days, I'll figure out a new plan. It's not how it worked. This was always the plan. It was the ultimate epic reveal. Extreme makeover, right? Like resurrection edition. Hey, angel, move that stone. Like, that's what it was, right? Everyone's like, whoa, check it out. Didn't even see that coming, right? That's what it is. It's the package. A tragic Friday leads to a beautiful resurrection Sunday. And on that day, death and hopelessness dies, right? So all those promises Jesus made, I'm gonna give you a hope and a joy and a life abundant, suddenly in an instant comes rushing back into the storyline. No wonder Paul is so desperate to know the power that rose Jesus from the dead. It changed everything. And so I'm sure with this, the women are flipping out. And then the angel says to them, now go quickly and tell the disciples that he is risen from the dead and he is going ahead of you to Galilee. You will see him there. Remember what I have told you. So the women ran quickly from the tomb. They were very frightened, but filled with great joy. And they rushed to give the disciples the angel's message. And I always just, I tend to read these stories and try to think about like the real human element in this. Like here's these two women just booking. I'm sure, like they've just talked to an angel. They just heard Jesus is risen. They're probably just cruising and they're probably trying to talk over their exasperation. Like, I can't believe it. Did you believe it? We're gonna see, this is so amazing. I'm freaking out, I'm shaking. I'm so, you know, I'm sure they're just impassioned by this. Like, are we certain this is true? I think this is true. And they're just, man, they're gonna go tell the fellas. But this is what's so cool about the story to me in Matthew. As they're on their way, there's this serendipitous little verse. Says, and as they went, Jesus met them. Remember what the angel said. Go to Galilee. He will meet you there. Right? And now there's this thing. And this is easy to overlook in the Gospels, but most of the time, it shows where people met Jesus. Or sometimes it shows where people ask Jesus come to meet another person. This is the only account where it shows Jesus going out of his way to meet some people. Like, he's doing this thing. And not only does he meet them, then it says, and he greeted them. And I always wonder, again, what the tone was like. You know, was it like, sup, you know? Or worry, or like, psych, you thought I was dead, not dead. I don't know how he greets them. I don't. But I go, I bet it was something where it was not just like, oh, right? Like this, like, aura moment. No, I have a feeling it is so filled with love and friendship and care and the sense of investedness. And so again, you know, the women are running and all of a sudden they're stopped in their tracks by somebody who says, ladies! And they turn and they see and he's greeting them. And in this word greet, it's a derivative of the word joy. It's like he says, joy to you. Rejoice with me. I'm back with you. We're doing this together. What you thought was terrible was beautiful. What you thought was defeat was victory. What you thought was demise was actually the enrichment of the world. And so again, it's high fives all around, knuckle bumps. I'm back. I'm back. So it says they ran to him and they grasped his feet and they worshiped him. See, what I love about this is it's almost like just a little VIP meet and greet for these two ladies, right? It's like, you know what? You ladies were there through the whole thing. Yeah, the guys, they split. But you stayed through it all, and so you get this special little marker. You're the first two people to see me resurrected, and I'm meeting up with you before I meet up with the rest of them in Galilee simply to say thank you, to say I love you. Thank you for being committed to me. And so Jesus gives them this special moment. And then Jesus says, don't be afraid. Go and tell my brothers to leave for Galilee and they will see me there. And so the women go back to the disciples. They tell them what's going on. There's a lot of confusion. There's a little bit of bickering. There's a lot of different things that happen in that. Matthew doesn't get into that. Matthew's like, I'm going to leave that to John to reveal all of our dirty secrets. I'm just going to go to kind of the end goal here, right? So he kind of goes to the rendezvous point. It says, then the 11 disciples, because now Judas is out of the equation, they left for Galilee. And going to the mountain where Jesus had told them to go, they saw him and they worshiped him. But some of them doubted. Do you ever read that and go, huh? Like, huh? Like here's Jesus, resurrected, supernatural event. People don't just die and rise on any regular occasion, right? And they're there, and they know he died. They know he was buried. And some of them are like, I'm going to worship you. And if you're like, I don't know, dude. I saw a YouTube video once that says this may not happen, you know. So I think it's strange. But it also makes me realize that, you know what, sometimes proof isn't enough to generate belief. Sometimes proof is not enough to generate faith. In fact, I think there's many things that we as human beings, we are given proofs. And in the face of the proof, we still go, I'm not sure. For example, I'm going to give you a proof right now. This is a proof. University of Arizona, go Wildcats. They did a research study that shows your cell phone is 7 to 10 times more nasty than a toilet bowl seat. Undeniable proof. It's peer reviewed. They're like, yep, that is a cesspool in your pocket. And in about 20 minutes, we're going to leave here, and you're going to put that thing to your face. Right? Or you're going to be at the store and your toddler is going to be all upset and you're going to give your phone to your toddler. You're going to start gnawing on it. And I've given you proof. It's worse than give the kid like your toilet bowl seat. It's cleaner than your phone, right? Or like, yeah, I don't know, man. I know it's a proof. I know it's a fact. I know it's peer reviewed, but I'm not sure. It's the same thing for these guys. Proof does not guarantee faith. I mean, even look at the way the religious officials handle it. Right? They're like, Jesus rose from the dead. We have a bunch of proofs. We've got to buy people off to cover up the proof. It's not enough to convince them. And I think it's the same with the disciples. There's still going to be this hesitation in them. There's still going to be this I'm not sure thing in them. The only thing that overcomes that, in my opinion, the only catalyst to really move from proof into faith in light of proof is this idea of saying, you know what, I need to go beyond myself, beyond my comfort level, beyond what I really feel like I can do or want to do. It's only when you push past that place that you begin to sense these things. And for the disciples, it's only going to be when they start to act on what the resurrection was designed to accomplish that they would really then start to move into deeper and deeper faith. Where they look at Jesus and say, okay, I want you to do in me what this whole event was designed to do, right? Because it's not enough, again, that they're just going, I think it's a historical reality. I think this is scientifically provable. That's not the thing that's going to move them into faith. What's going to move them into faith is when they take this event, why Jesus did it, and they begin to live that out in their lives in radical ways that are uncomfortable but powerful. See, until they would do that, they're always going to be riddled with doubt and challenge and everything else. And so Jesus goes immediately from, hey, I'm here, I've risen, here's what I want you to do. Here's what's going to unlock in you a radical faithfulness in life. It says, Jesus came and told his disciples, he says, I have been given all authority in heaven and on earth. Therefore, because of this, go and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Teach these new disciples to obey all the commands that I've given to you. And be sure of this, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. See, what's going to convert their doubt, their timidity, their life kind of stuckedness that they're in? Well, it's not going to be kind of believing the factualness of this event, but it's going to be them saying, all right, Jesus, again, you're up to a thing, and I want to be a part of the thing that you're up to. And so I want to go where you are going, and I want to do what you are doing, and I want to live what you are teaching, and I want to embody what it is you care about. I want to live out this faith thing, this life thing, this truth thing, this joy thing, this hope thing, as you call me to do it. So for them, it means to go and to teach and to baptize and to invest, because all authority is given to him to be played out in their lives through their efforts, through their strengths. See, I love this. Because it's only until that happens or it's only when that happens, that these guys go from kind of the knuckleheads of the Gospels to like men that really went out and changed the world, women that changed the world, right? Because they really embraced then what it was they were meant to do, and that's what unlocks this deeper faith in them. See, I think what resurrection power is all about is seeking to be faithful and seeking to be seeking Jesus. And from that, more of that rushes into us. That's why the resurrection isn't just, hey, this thing that happened, but it's this thing that still can happen today for everybody that follows Jesus because they're seeking his power to be played out through them. And I think the way this really happens, and I love that part where he says, teaching them to obey all that I've commanded you. My mind always rushes back to, well, what is it that Jesus commanded us? And I am so drawn again to the Sermon on the Mount because it's such a concentration of that. And what I love about that is to do the Sermon on the Mount, it requires me being beyond myself. It's not about me. It's about others. It's not about my own fears or wants or cravings or dispositions or habits. It's about this thing that changes the world. It's about a radical and reckless love that says, you're my enemy, I'm gonna do good to you, I'm gonna pray for you, I'm gonna bless you. You're my neighbor, I'm gonna love you as I love myself. I'm gonna go out of my way to turn the other cheek and go the extra mile, and I'm not gonna be judgmental, but I'm gonna be investing, right? Like, all that stuff is radical. And that takes real faith. Like, I find, like, reading my Bible, going to church, things of that nature, those are awesome, but they're not hard, really. They're not really hard. I find the resurrection power of Jesus really unlocks in the hard, hard stuff. And the stuff that you kind of just don't want to do because it seems so silly in our world. But that's exactly what he wants to accomplish. That's how resurrection power is unlocked. And so he punched our ticket for a fullness of life, an abundance of joy, and the sense of death-conquering capacity to be lived out today and every day. But it comes through seeking him, the one who went from cadaver to risen Christ like that, with a power that is still given to you. And so, inspired by the resurrection to come and empowered by the resurrection that was, I encourage us all to every day, man, rise up in joy and rise up in hope and rise up in determination and rise up in selflessness and rise up in being something different and rise up to show the world this Jesus that isn't dead but is surely alive and is surely showing that life in all of his people. Let's go ahead and pray together. Jesus, we know that this day is, again, more than just an historical marker in a book. It is a reminder that you have reigning authority and power that is played out in your people when they do the counterintuitive thing of living like you and thinking like you, interacting with the world like you, where we are emboldened by love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and long-suffering and self-control, these fruits of your Holy Spirit in us. We know that this plays out most powerfully when we own your definition of love, and it's not about us, but it's about others, and it's about you and how you want to use us to love others because we love you. It's about doing the upside down and backwards things that, again, the world may look at and say, that's not how you get stuff done, or that's foolish, or that's reckless, or that's silly, and yet you said that's the kingdom-shaping stuff. Maybe if you're with us this morning or you're watching online and you're like, I'm not a Christian, I came because that's what we do at these holidays, but you sense that you want this Jesus in your life in a way that you've never had before. You go, I want to follow this Jesus. I know that this Jesus died for my sin, rose to give me life. I want to be a part of that life. I want his life to be in me. If you desire that today, that is a prayer way for you. If you're watching online, that's a prayer way for you. Where you just simply say, Jesus, I know I've done my own thing, gone my own way. I've been making up the rules, but I want to do life your way because you've given your life to me so that I could have a new way of life, new experience of life, that I can have a joy that no one can take away, a peace that surpasses understanding. You make that your prayer today, he hears you. He brings you into this family of faith. And again, we know in that we're not perfect. We're not going to have it all figured out. We're still going to have our struggles or doubts or whatever. But you know what? He's like, man, I'm still recklessly committed to you in my grace. Right? I'm going to bring you on to completion. If you make that your prayer today, we would love to know. I'll be outside in the front after the service. There's also on our app a tile that you can click on that and say, I decided to follow Jesus today. We would just love to know. We'd love to know. Jesus, for the rest of your people, help us. Help us to be truly about your business and not in our own strength and might. I think that's the other thing too. I look at Paul and he's like, man, it's resurrection power, not Matt's white knuckling it power. May it be you flowing through us that makes the difference. We thank you and praise you in your name.